worked the presentation.
See you. Merry Christmas.
You know, we indicated we're going to give an update today and actually show the maps and go to the first. The population of Sussex County has grown substantially. The map up on the screen now is the current configuration. The population of Sussex County is 2,037,378. So that's an increase of over 40,000 citizens since the last 10-year census. So our ideal population in each district is 47,475, 5% deviation from that. Our need for redistricting is that, unlike 10 years ago when we only had two districts that are outside the acceptable deviation ranges, four of the five current council districts are now outside the bounds of acceptable deviation based on the newest census data. District 1 is below the deviation, thus creating need to expand its geographical boundaries. District 2 is below the deviation, again, needing to expand its geographical boundaries. 3 is above the deviation, creating a need to contract its geographical boundaries. District 4, likewise, is above the deviation, creating a need to contract its geographical boundaries. Now, District 5 is the only district that is within the acceptable deviation. However, in its current form, the district lacks communities of common interest. If we go back to the first slide, and again, if you'll slide that over, that shows in the map the actual deviation from on each district, and you'll see the substantial deviations from what is permitted. Now we can go back to the next slide there. Our goals for the process, we wanted an impartial process. We want to keep together communities of interest as much as possible, follow road streams and other landmarks to the extent possible, and look at current and historic trends and data. I have presented here the House of Representative districts and following that the Senate. I'm not going to dwell on those, but just to point out that it's not just Sussex County that had to go through this process, but in fact it's a statewide district or a statewide issue. Next, I looked at the school board districts or school districts. Reason I did that, when I think of the school districts, I think of communities of interest. Using those as a template, there's a desire to keep those community interests together as much as possible. Municipalities and communities tend to be bonded to their school districts, whether it be the Delmar Wildcats, the Laurel Bulldogs, the Seaford Blue Jays, Woodbridge Blue Raiders, Milford Buccaneers, Cape Henlopen Vikings, Sussex Central Golden Knights, and the Indian River Indians. Unfortunately, the school district's geography cannot be used in exact fashion, especially in the eastern part of the county with the larger districts and population districts. If you go back up to that map, again, you'll see that especially Indian River School District, that's the largest non-technical school district in the state of Delaware. So, and Cape District is large as well. So it's very difficult, especially in that eastern part of the county, to be able to follow those lines exactly. Now, if we go down to the process, during the process, we looked at the, as I indicated, towns, landmark school districts, and the current council district maps. Using this process, we had many derivations of the maps, because what I started with, frankly, besides the school districts, I looked at the, if you go back up, please, if you look at the during the process, I looked at the current districts, and with those current districts, I tweaked those a lot to see what kind of changes I could make to make us compliant. But when you start doing that, you look, if you take from one area, you immediately have a change in the next map and then the next one. I started doing these processes back in the 80s, and the first one I did, and at that time, and I know Mr. Schaefer had been involved in some of those in the past too, we actually had large maps on tables with calculators, and we would move through one census district and you would calculate, and then you'd have to move the next, and it was very cumbersome. We're using the census blocks in these, and of course with the software it's much easier. But during this process, one of the things we did, we asked for public input. In fact, we after my first presentation, we opened it up to the public and asked them to submit matters as well. We gave till December 1. And we did get, and if you scroll up, one of the, if you scroll up to that map, please, one of the maps that we received was from the League of Women Voters. We had many comments concerning that map, as well as we had some people submitted similar maps, made derivations from that map with their comments and justifications. But when we looked at this map, I indicated in my last presentation that I saw a lot of things that I liked in the map. So we looked at that map, also looked at the things, you know, like the school districts and our current maps, and I am proposing the following map. If you go to that, you'll see that it's very similar to the League of Women Voters maps. As I, like I said, it had a lot of good aspects to it. It had that central district, and you had the western districts and the eastern districts keeping communities of interest. But I did have some variations from the League's map, and I'll point those out now. The first deviation or variation I had of the League map shows that area between District 1 and District 2. The League map showed the boundary line being from Seaford out the Reliance Road and everything north of that into District 1. Really, that splits up some of the Seaford community west of the district. So what I looked at was, and we have it overlaid there, we have the school district line to the north. So we tweaked that area and moved the line up to that school district line. I tried to follow that school district line further east, but the numbers just did not work. So that's why you see that on the western part of Seaford moving up though to follow that school district line. Then on variation two, this is just a very small, sparsely populated area northeast of Milford. It's not part of the Bay Beaches, but it is that little area north, and it is in the Milford School District, and it is in the close to the town of Milford, so that's why I added that. The next variation, variations three and four, we put on one map. When I looked at the League's map, I noticed that they had the Central Sussex District, District 5, going all the way to Route 1. And really, just because people live on the west side of Route 1, that doesn't make them feel that they're part of the Georgetown, Millsboro, Central Sussex District. They're really more related and have more in common with the area of Lewis area and the Bay Beach area. So we moved that area away from District 5 and put that into District 3. And there's also, we had a comment from one of the people who submitted comments, was the fact that the League map closely aligned with the boundary of Milton. And they suggested that that needs to be enlarged because there are going to be some annexations that are already in the works with the town of Milton. And that made sense. So we made that deviation from the League's maps here. And then the last deviation we made from the League's maps was in areas five and six. And really, part of this was driven by number, but there is an area on the west side of the district that we were able to follow the Indian River School District line there. And then on the very bottom of the map, we just straightened out a line instead of having it angled off east. We followed the road, went straight down. So they were fairly minor changes, but I think significant. Tried to follow school district lines as much as possible, other areas of community interest. So if now we look at Council 1, you'll see that on Council 1, this is where we started the process, looking at it. And as we indicated, we had to expand to capture more, so we aligned communities of interest. Bridgeville was moved to District 2, and Delmar and Gumborough were moved from District 5 to District 1. This district is wholly contained in western and southern Sussex and includes all of Laurel, Seaford, Blades, Bethel, Gumborough, and Delmar. And it also contains most of the Seaford School District, all of the Laurel and Delmar School Districts, and a portion of the Indian River School District. District 2, this district gained Bridgeville from District 1 and Milton from District 3. However, it lost Georgetown to District 5. This district has most of the Woodbridge School District, parts of the Cape Henlopen, Indian River, and Milford School Districts. District 3, because of the large population increase, this district underwent significant changes. With geographical limitations to the east, changes were achievable in the western and southern part of the district. This district contains all of the Delaware Bay beach communities, and one of the changes I had actually considered in the northern part of that district was putting Slaughter Beach up with District 2. But I thought, because traditionally it had been aligned with Milford, but I thought that it was more important to keep the bay beaches together as the league maps had shown. And it contains all of the Delaware Beach, Bay Beach communities, Rehoboth Beach, Dewey Beach, as well as some of the areas in the northern stretches of the inland bays. This contains much of the Cape Henlopen School District, as well as small parts of the Milford and Indian River School Districts. District 4 lost much of its northern reaches, but picked up Fenwick Island. In addition to Bethany, South Bethany, Fenwick Island, the district includes Frankfort, Dagsboro, and Selbyville, that southern U.S. 113 corridor, and many of the small southern towns and villages. All of this district's area is within the Indian River School District. District 5, although this was the only district that was within the mandated deviation, it has undergone the most dramatic change. This is now the Central Sussex District. Georgetown was added to this district, while Fenwick Island, which was added to District 4, Gumborough and Delmar added to District 1 were removed. The district spans portions of the Cape Henlopen and the Sussex Central portion of the Indian River School Districts. So we have the demographic information that will show both countywide, plus we have it set up so any user that goes to our map can click on and pull down the demographic information for each and every one of the districts. And our next steps, why don't you go back to that map? This shows the difference, and we can slide this to show the difference between what it originally was and what the maps look like now, and it's quite dramatic that you can see the changes there. Our next steps will that we will receive written public comment on the proposed map until 4:30 p.m. Friday, January 7th, 2022. Again, you know, you can see that we've looked at and listened to what the public was saying. We're continuing that process. We have listed here how the comments can be submitted, either direct email to redistricting@sussexcounty.gov or with standard mail to the Clerk of Council, P.O. Box 589, Georgetown, Delaware, 19947, or there's a drop down on this program that they can use. I propose to introduce the ordinance, have it drafted and ready for introduction January 11th of 2022, and then the public hearing on the proposed ordinance in February of 2022. It's been a long process. A lot of work has gone into this. I want to thank first Megan Narbus, who has, she was phenomenal. And adding the information to this, when we were dealing with the Board of Elections, we indicated on one of our interactive calls with them that we had the school district information on our maps. They questioned, how'd you get that on there? Well, you have to ask Megan. she did that. I'd like to thank Chip Guy for his edits and review and input. Dwayne Kilgo, I think I had him on speed dial. And of course, Todd was great working with him. Ryan Adams was actually 10 years ago involved in the process as a intern when we worked on the process, and he has been very active with the process now. And the Board of Elections has been great to deal with, especially Chris Ramos, who is their tech guy that was working with the maps, and just so many other people that took the time to submit comments, League of Women Voters and others that commented. We appreciated the comments, and I think people can look at this and say we did listen and take those in consideration. And all the community leaders and people out in the community that I reached out to during the process, asking them about their communities. So, thank you very much.
Thank you both. Mr. Lawson. Mr. Treasurer's report.
Thank you, Mr. President. County Administrator's report for December 14, 2021. Item 1. Sussex County Council would like to thank the community for participating in the 38th Annual Caroling on the Circle yesterday, Monday, December 13th. We had a very successful night with hundreds of carolers, and thus far have collected nearly 19,000 canned goods and non-perishable food items for our less fortunate neighbors. We'd like to remind everyone that the county is continuing to collect items until the end of the year and will continue to distribute these goods to our local food pantries. We want to thank our volunteers, local businesses, and schools for helping to collect the food over the last month and for making this year's Caroling on the Circle a success. Item 2, please note the county offices will be closed on December 23rd, 24th, and 27th to celebrate the Christmas holiday and December 31st for the New Year's holiday. The next regularly scheduled council meeting will be held on Tuesday, January 4th, 2022 at 10 a.m. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir. Caroling was very successful last night. It was very nice. At the end, all the elected people got up there and sang. I would like to say I think that Mr. Rod is a little bit off key, but other than that, the rest of us sounded very good.
You did the best.
Mr. Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning, Mr. President, members of council. I do have a quarterly pension update because the pension committee is making some recommendations to some of our policies. So what we're going to do is we're going to have an investment performance update by Michael Schoen of Marquette Associates. Then I'll get into the actuary report. They give us a report every year to tell us how much we should be contributing. Then I'm going to talk about the two changes. We have a proposal to the funding policy of the OPEB fund, which is the health insurance part, and a proposal to adjust the assumed rate of return or the discount rate of both of the pension fund and the OPEB funds. So what I'm going to do at this time is turn it over to Michael Schoen to give us an investment update on our funds.
Morning.
Well, good morning.
Morning.
It is still morning, right?
It is.
Just checking that.
Well, for those of you who don't know, I'm retiring at the end of this month. And
congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I want to tell you, I appreciate the confidence you've placed in us through all these years. And I got to tell you, for me, it's very fitting that you're my last meeting, because although I have a lot of very good clients, the one that I feel has done the best job in fiscal prudence has been Sussex County, both in a way that you've provided good, reasonable benefits to the employees, but you've funded them. It sounds like maybe doesn't everybody else? No, they don't. And not only have you funded them, but you've, in good years, you've funded them in advance. And I can tell you, I have no other clients that have ever done that. And I did this, as you can see, for a long time. So congratulations to yourselves for the fiscal prudence that you've shown over the years. Okay. Just a couple key points. You've had strong investment returns. I'll show you some numbers in a moment, but very strong investment returns, especially with last year. They've exceeded the actuarial assumed rate of returns, which is what Gina's going to speak about in a moment, but that is the hurdle. It's not whether you have a positive or negative return. It's do you exceed what the actuary is assuming to be your rate of return. And to the degree that you exceed it, that increases your funded level, okay, which assists your balance sheet, and also lowers the actuarially determined contributions on an annual basis. That has lowered your actuarially determined contributions, as I already mentioned. Just a point, as you may recall, you switched to the OCIO investment approach a little over a year ago, and that has been positive. You had gone to slightly underperforming your benchmarks, and now that you've, over the last year, you've out exceeded your benchmarks. You added real estate in 2020, which has been very positive. Since inception, that has had an 8.4% return per year, which is much higher from than where it was taken from, which was from the bonds. Okay, and you're in the queue to add infrastructure, which is expected to be funded in January 2020, in another month. And that's just some further diversification and also to help address some of the concerns about where is inflation headed.
So within the
infrastructure. I'm jumping ahead of your question.
Yeah, so what, but within the infrastructure, is there any particular area that they emphasize?
It's really across the board, but it's more, a lot of it is you know, some pipelines, it's some cell phone towers, it's a lot of things, but not all, that have some inflation ties to them, positively, that you can get inflation, you know, because that's really one of the big keys out there right now is,
yeah,
where is inflation going, is it just transitory, or is this going to be longer term? You know, I recall the 70s, I know Gina does not, but you've probably read about them. And so, you know, what are the steps you can do to help protect? Because if inflation goes up, frankly, salaries go up. And if salaries go up, then the liability goes up. So what do you do to help hedge that increase in your liability? Well, you try to get assets that are going to better protect yourself in inflationary times.
So is that part of your, I mean, are you going to expand on that, or are you responding to my earlier question on
me
that?
Me particularly?
Because
only
one
if
of the
you call me before December 31st, but
wow.
as a firm, there are some things we've done, and actually, sort of a little bit of an expectation. The addition of real estate,
right,
is a hedge against inflation. Infrastructure is. You have a shorter bond portfolio,
right,
because when inflation goes up, interest rates go up. When interest rates go up, bond values go down,
right,
so you have better protection there. And then also, you have a little leaning toward value stocks, and value stocks tend to do better during inflationary time periods because they tend to be a little bit more invested in the raw, you know, some in commodities, some energy and things like that.
Yeah.
So did you have a more specific question?
Well, Gina warned me not to get in the weeds because I could talk to you about this all afternoon, but the rest of the members may not appreciate that.
Well,
so
Gina told me she's controlling the clicker. So so she's clicking you and me out.
Tips and precious metals, are they part of the portfolio?
They are not right now. Tips sound wonderful, but it actually have not worked out well.
I agree.
Yeah, so.
Precious metals?
Not at this point in time.
Okay.
But you can have a further discussion with Pat on that.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. I won't belabor it.
Okay. The market value of the fund as of the end of November was almost $154 million. Your returns for year to date, not fiscal year, but year to date, was 11.5%. And fiscal year to date, which would be from July 1st to the end of November, was 1.9%. And then your 5 years as of the end of June, and you might say, well, why June if we picked up? Because your actuarial reports are done on as of the end of June, and that'll lead into some of what Gina's going to talk about, has averaged 10.8% per year. So that's a significant outperformance relative to the current actuarial assumed rate of return of 7%. The OPEB fund is at $61.6 million. Returns are very similar to the pension. They're managed very similarly, not exactly the same, but very similarly. Year-to-date, 11.8, fiscal year, 1.9, and then the five-year return at 10.7 per year. Okay. Now, lots of dots there. Why is this there? Because you see that over the last 5 years, you've beaten your rate of return significantly. Well, things revert to the norm, okay? When things go very well, then in the future, then maybe they don't do as well as they did over the last 5 years. So the actuarial assumed returns are forward-looking, not backward-looking. The way to read this, as you can see, and this line goes down, slants to the left. So the further to the left you are, the higher up the blue dots are, the further to the right, the lower they are. What does that mean? Normalized PE, that's how much you're paying for a dollar of returns. So when stocks are cheap, it's a low PE. It's to the left side of the graph, okay? But you see, when stocks are cheap and it's a low PE, that's when over the next 10 years, you've had high returns. That's the vertical axis. But when stocks are expensive, that's to the right-hand side, you can see those dots are real low. That means the next 10 years returns were much lower. And that makes sense. If you pay expensively for something, you're going to get lower returns than if you pay inexpensively for something. So where are we right now? Well, the green line is the average over the last roughly 50 years. The red line is what it was back in October 2016, okay? So looking back like 5 years ago, okay? But the orange is where things are right now. And you can see that orange line, the PE is about 25. That means stocks are expensive. So you should expect, it's not an absolute certainty, but pretty certain when you look at those dots, you know, pretty good graph there, that it's more than likely that the returns of stocks over the next 10 years will be not negative, but lower than they have been over a historic time period. Okay, next, please. This is bonds. Wow, that gold, yellow, whatever chart is like right on top of the blue. What does that tell you? Blue is the yield on bonds, okay, at any given point in time. The yellow is the return you got over bonds over the next 5 years. That makes sense. If you go to the bank, buy a CD, it's what are they now, 1.5% maybe, 1%? Whatever it is, if you buy a CD and it's 1.5%, you hold it for 5 years, what kind of return do you get? 1.5%. So if bonds are yielding 1.17% as of the end of October, then you probably should expect low returns on bonds over the next 5 years. So with all that good news I gave you, I also have to tell you, you know, in the future, at least in the next 5 to 10 years, we expect lower than average returns.
So you're retiring on the good news side.
And then turn it over to Pat.
The man following you or lady following you has got to be on the bad news side.
Hey, you know, things are cyclical. You know, you can call me out of retirement if you want.
So if we hit a period of heavy inflation for an extended period of time, there's almost no way that the Fed doesn't raise interest rates.
Correct.
I mean, I would think. I mean, I know the federal government's not going to like to see that, but at some point they're going to force their hand and have to do it, I would think, which is going to cause bonds to do better.
And, or to do worse, you mean?
Well,
yields will go up.
Yeah, current bonds. Yields will go up. Current bonds will do worse. Stock market does worse.
Actually, short run, yes, but long run, actually, it tends to do better because then they can raise prices. You know, if your costs don't increase as much as your prices increase, you actually get a greater profit margins. And if you look over time periods with higher inflation, the returns on stocks have been better than they have been under lower inflation, if you look at long enough time periods. But that's why you've also had real estate. You know, it's right. Timing is everything, but you've gotten 8.4% return since you've invested in that infrastructure. So some diversification. And we don't know for sure that inflation will run. You know, it's still the question of is this a supply side issue, you know, just choking up the supply chain, or is it because of all the infusion of money through monetary policy and fiscal policy?
I don't know. The chairman said shouldn't consider it transitory anymore.
Well,
I don't know.
It's probably, yeah, 6 months ago we thought it was, maybe not so much now.
Yeah. Sorry.
Real estate prices go up, transfer taxes increase, you know, but then interest rates go up, and maybe people build less houses, so you always have a, there's a yin and a yang to that.
Right.
That's why this sort of striking that moderate spot, and not trying to fully guess where things are going to be. So where's that put us? Well, Marquette, our estimate is over the next 10 years, I stress the word 10 years, that's at 6.7%. We're going to say 6.25%, okay? That's less than 7% you're using for assumed rate of return right now. But over 30 years, I think it's going to be a little bit over 7, because some of those things, if interest rates go up and yields are higher, now you have bonds that are yielding 3, 5, 7%. Well, then you hold those for 5 or 10 years and you get much better returns. Stock market, you know, if it doesn't do as well as it does, well, then you're back to norms and then you get more normal returns. So somewhere, and I hope I'm not jumping into your space here, but somewhere maybe between those two is a good spot to be.
Thank you. So I'm going to lead into the actuary report. So where are we in relationship to our liability? So the annual actuary report, it looks at a few things. So as of June 30th, we are between 106%, 118% funded, depending on how you look at it. Actuaries take your gains and they spread it over multiple years. Market is, as of June 30th, where are we? So we'll just say we're 118% funded. So what goes into making us so well funded? So we have employee contributions, we have our county contributions that we make annually, and we had a really good year. We had $30.6 million in investment earnings that was added to that bucket. So coming out of that bucket, we had expenses of $0.2 million, and benefits going out to our current pensioners was $5.3 million. This is a chart over time showing our funded percentage. So you can see back in 2012, we were 82.3% funded, and we're up to 106, 118%, whichever line you want to use, as of 2021, is June 30. What the other thing to notice here on this is the percentages down below. So not only have we been going up, but we've also been very conservative and prudent by lowering our assumed rate of return at that same period. So we were assuming we were going to get 8%, and then we went down to 7%. And I'm going to get into why that's important and why it's great that we've been doing that over the years. So looking at our health insurance side of our pension fund, it's very similar. We're almost 100% funded. We have county contributions of $3.1 million and investment earnings of $12.4 million. This is a lot smaller fund, so the investment earnings are, of course, smaller. And then going out, we have expenses that are a lot less because it is a smaller fund, and benefits coming out at $2.6 million. Similar chart that I showed you for the pension, you can see over time we've become more funded. We went from 65% and now we're at 99%. The gray is our liability, and this one is the value of our assets. So you can see assets and liabilities equal each other pretty much in 2021. Sorry, make sure I didn't skip. Yep. Okay. So right now, our pension funding policy, because we wanted to get 100% funded and we were a lot lower in the OPEB fund, the policy stated that we would contribute 9.5% of our payroll, or whatever the actuary said we should contribute, whichever's greater, which has worked so well for us because now we're 100% funded. But now it's the time to relook at that policy, because you will see if we continue with that, we would be 138% funded in 2041. Well, we don't need to be overfunded. So now's the time to say we'll contribute at least the actuary determined contribution to stay at our 100% or slightly above, because we do overfund slightly. So that is my first recommendation. That is a recommendation of the pension committee. And I do have a motion for your consideration for this first part. Can I read the motion?
Any questions, Mrs. Jennings? I do want to make a comment before you read the motion.
Sure.
And thanks, Mrs. Jennings, and the committee. But I would say that previous councils followed your suggestions, and every year, I think, put more money in than we were required to put in.
That is correct.
Which has got us to where we are today. When I would say with our OPEB fund, that I don't have any facts, but I'll bet you there's probably not three governments in the country their OPEB fund is funded at that extent.
That's a very good estimate. I'd say there's we happen to have one of the other ones, but it's so rare to be fully funded on that liability.
And the pension the same way. I mean, a lot of places, you know, we're looking at ours, looking, I don't know what the state is, but the state's very low compared to what they need to be in there. So this is all good news for our employees. Past, present, and future.
Absolutely.
So, anyway, would you miss, please?
Sure. Be it moved that the Sussex County Council, based on the recommendation from the Pension Committee, revise the OPEB funding policy to reflect that the Sussex County will contribute at least the actuary determined contribution.
Pleasure, Council.
I would move to adopt.
Motion, Mr. Riley.
Second.
Second, Mr. Schaefer. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
All of you. Motion carried. Next.
Okay. Then the next one that I wanted to talk about is the assumed rate of return or the discount rate. So what this first chart over here on the left top shows you is you have the treasury rate, so very secure investments and what it would assume that you would get. The top would be what we are saying we're going to try to achieve. The blue would be your risk. What are you going to contribute? You're going to have to put more in stocks, things that are a little more risky. So as you can see, what we've done over time is lowered that rate over time. Okay, and you can see where we are in 2021. So we went from 8% in 2013, and we slowly have brought it down to 7%. The chart over on the right shows you the population of governments and where they stand. What's their funding policy? So back in 2001, the median was 8%. And you can see over time, that percentage has gone down. We're usually ahead of the curve. We're very conservative, and we want to operate that way. So what you can see, we've usually, if you line this up with this, we're usually behind that median, below it. And that's what I'm suggesting again today. So you can see in 2022, 2021, the median, we're now at 7%. I'm asking that we start lowering it. We're not as risky as other governments. We protect our assets. We don't try to over invest in stocks and risky stocks. So why I'm doing this right now is we're over 100% funded. So by changing it at this point, it's not affecting our liability and our financial statements. So this is the time to do this. We're doing it in a good year. You don't want to do it in a year where you're struggling. So the impact of this change, pension fund would go from 106% to 103%. OPEB would go to 99% to 95%. And again, these are numbers as of June 30. So we're a good year again. So we're doing above 7%. So we're going to be close to that 100% when it comes back to June 30 of this year. How's this going to affect our budget? So the actuary determined contribution for pension was $2 million coming into fiscal year 22. It would go to $2.6 million. But because the way we budget, and I budget conservatively, I had already put $3.4 million in the budget because I wasn't sure how our returns were going to play out. So we're already contributing more than we need to contribute, even after lowering the interest rate. So we're in great shape, as always. OPEB, same thing, $1.4 million to $1.7 million. This is using the actuary determined contribution and not the 9.5%. So really, that's the $3 million. So you've already made a change to lower the contribution. This is still going to be under budget. So even though there's an increase, it's not affecting our budget.
Mr. Rock.
I'm curious about how does the actuarial, I mean, the OPEB is paying for future benefits like life insurance and medical insurance, stuff like that. Now, how does the actuarial determine if those rates of increase are going to be consistent over time, or, you know, what if they got really out of hand? I mean, I guess we would adjust as they went forward, but
rates.
How do they determine that? I mean, what's it based on? Is there a risk that is being considered?
Yes.
In all of this, that rates could really go nuts and,
Well, they're using whatever rate we put in here is the rate they're using in their assumptions. So they have a list of assumptions in their actuary report, including employee salary shall increase whatever percentage.
Right.
We're going to give a COLA of this percentage. Those are in there. The assumed rate of return is also in there at 7%. So it's assuming this. So every year, what they do is, okay, here's our assumptions. Here's what you actually did. They take those differences and they amortize them over 5 years. So then we see an increase. So that's why there's that actuary funded ratio versus the market funded ratio. And there's a difference because they're taking those losses of our assumptions or gains and spreading them out. So, and then what happens is what we try to do then in between 5 to 10 years, and we're very prudent on doing this, is that we get an experience study done through the right. actuary to adjust those assumptions, because we've seen now last 5 years, our assumptions are off. We need to change those. So
too
we
high,
do that as
low.
Well. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
They were what? They were high?
No, he's just saying if they're too high or too low.
Or too low, with that experience, there's a feedback loop that helps us guide our contribution level.
Yeah.
Yep.
More questions, Ms. Jennings?
I have a motion about changing the assumed rate of return discount rate.
Please read your motion.
Be it moved that the Sussex County Council, based on the recommendation from the Pension Committee, lower the assumed rate of return discount rate for both the pension and OPEB funds to 6.75%.
Pleasure, Council.
I move to adopt. I mean, that's going to drive some of a risk out of our portfolio, at least a little bit. So,
motion, Mr. Riley.
Second.
Second, Mr. Schaefer. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to point out, too, that the fact that these funds are fully funded is a reflection on the previous councils, but it also for future councils helps ensure that taxes won't have to be raised in order to, you know, meet these obligations. Right. So it's, you know, it's being responsible for the future councils and to the taxpayers that they're not going to be looking at tax increases for this purpose. So this is good management. This is great stuff.
Well, and certainly it's good news for our clerk that her pension is fully funded.
She's going to be safe.
Yeah. When she goes out next month, we'll know she's going to be taken care of.
The next month or next
thank
year?
You very much.
No.
And Michonne, thank you very much for all your help.
Thank you.
Yes. We certainly appreciate it. Good luck with your retirement. Certainly come back and visit anytime you want to and bring good news.
Playing pickleball part of the time.
There you go. We have a place to do that, so come on down. Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's good. Mrs. Brewing.
Okay, good afternoon. All right, it's my honor right now to announce and congratulate our fourth quarter Shining Star winners and our Employee of the Year. So we may have lost a couple, but I think we've got a few still in the audience. Shining Star Committee selected Jacob Adams, who works as a paramedic, and Holly Flegger, scheduling coordinator in our building code department. These are fourth quarter winners. These individuals were selected out of a total of 41 submissions. Each one will receive a certificate, a Shining Star pin, and will be eligible for the Employee of the Year. Okay, at this time I would like to read their submissions. Jacob Adams received a Above and Beyond badge. For 2 dates, Jake was stationed at 104, had 2 separate Deltek ride-alongs. This person, Leah O'Boyle, who submitted the submission, personally witnessed Jake taking hours out of his time to go through every medication and procedure that SCEMS medics deploy here and discuss them with the students. He has a passion for teaching and for SCEMS that keeps these students interested and helps them understand what we do from another perspective. Jake did not have to spend so much of his time with such an in-depth overview, but he did so without question or even being asked. These moments are what will lead him to achieving his goals as a FTO, field training officer, here at SCEMS in the future. Jake is so passionate about his career here that I wouldn't be surprised if the Dell Tech students came back to be paramedics one day. Great job, Jake. Keep it up. The second winner is Holly Flegger, who is here in the audience. She received two submissions, one from Abby Steele, a coworker. She nominated Holly for the Above and Beyond badge. Holly was on vacation until September 8th. She found out that one of the clerks in the building inspections was out prior to the Labor Day weekend and the Tuesday after Labor Day. Holly worked from home on her last night of vacation to get inspections scheduled and documents uploaded. I think a lot of people would just say it can wait until tomorrow, but Holly went the extra mile to make sure customers were able to get their inspections scheduled and lighten the workload for the office staff. Second submission was from Chris Keeler. He nominated Holly for the Above and Beyond badge. Holly was a major player in an effort to assist a customer with a scheduling and inspection efforts on multiple major construction projects that needed inspections and finals issued in a matter of days to meet the customer's deadlines so that they could go to settlement as scheduled. Holly and her colleagues' efforts during an already extraordinarily busy time went way above and beyond their expected duties. Their efforts should be highly commended. Okay, so those are our fourth quarter winners. So now is what we've been waiting for all year, our Employee of the Year. Quarterly winners that are able to be here with us today, if you would, please stand up when I call your name to be recognized. Our first quarter winners are Pat Allegro-Smith from the Sheriff's Department, Amanda Hollis, and Tyler Short from Information Technology. I don't know if they made it back in or not.
They're in there. Amanda's in there.
She's there. I saw both of them earlier.
Oh, while she's coming, I guess
there's Amanda.
There she is.
Okay, our second quarter winners, Jordan Dickerson in the Engineering Department and Guillermo Montalvo Marino in Community Development. Our third quarter winners, she was here earlier, but I think she had to leave, Sharon Palmer, South Coastal Library, Sherry Sheridan, Register of Wills, and Scott Thornton, Engineering. And then our fourth quarter winners that I just announced, Jacob Adams, who cannot be here today, but Holly Flegger is in the back, building code. If you all could join me in giving a round of applause to all of these. All right, thank you everyone. All right, so Sussex County Government Shining Star Employee Recognition Committee has selected Guillermo Montalvo Marino as the 2021 Employee of the Year. Guillermo began his career in July 2016 in the Community Development Department and currently works as a Rehabilitation Specialist 1. He was selected from a pool of 10 quarterly winners, and those selections came from nearly 100 submissions this year. Guillermo was our second quarter winner because of his willingness to help another county department in need of a Spanish interpreter. On his scheduled days off, he selflessly came in to help Spanish-speaking couples with marriage licenses and ceremonies. In addition, he has graciously sat in interviews with the Marriage Bureau staff in the selection of their part-time clerk interpreters to make sure they knew their stuff, right? So Guillermo, I would like to present you today with your Employee of the Year certificate. For 1 week of vacation, a plaque. You have demonstrated your above and beyond attitude, service, and commitment to Sussex County government. Felicidades, de trabaja bien hecho. Congratulations, and thank you.
I'm just very thankful. I never expected this. I just thought that I was just gonna come here and, you know, be joined by other winners of the Shining Star. But it is a pleasure to receive this award. I love working for Sussex County, and I love helping out with as many other departments as I can. So thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, and thank all the winners. Thank all the winners. Mr. Brewington, I have a quick question for you.
Sure, absolutely.
I'm going to probably guess in all your time that everybody, you know, puts in names. The council has never been recognized as employee of the quarter, have anything like that, or employee of the year or something, or
no. So
I
our,
didn't think we had. Yeah,
no,
yeah,
our yeah. employee of the year is selected from a committee of various employees on in
but,
all
I mean,
different
departments.
We've
never been nominated. They've been nominated for employee of the year or something, have we, or anything?
Not yet.
Yeah. Okay. Just checking.
You need the nomination.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Just thought I'd check on that. Thank you for all you do. Yeah. Thank you very much, Mr. Medlars. Mr. Harry comes. I know he's here.